Hello, and welcome to the history of Haiti. In the last episode, I talked about the beginning phase of Giffard's presidency. I talked about his attempts to modernize and reform the Haitian economy. I discussed the economic issues Haiti faced, such as a worthless currency, as well as Giffard's attempts to remedy them. I covered his improvements in education. I also talked about the United States and discussed how they were going through the Civil War at the time. In this episode, I want to mainly talk about the Dominican Republic, as it is going to be annexed by Spain, and then it will break free of Spanish rule. We left the political situation in the Dominican Republic with Pedro Santana once again becoming president after sending his rival Baez into exile. Note that this is not the last time we will see Baez, as he has only been through three of his five different presidencies. But Santana, like many Dominican elites of his day, did not really believe in the continuation of Dominican independence. The DR, and Santana specifically, faced many internal and external threats. For example, Santana was in perpetual fear of being overthrown by rival Dominican leaders, such as allies of Baez. Another threat he faced was Haiti. As I talked about last episode, he and Giffard had agreed on a 5-year truce. But this did not ease fear that, in the future, Haiti would invade the DR. Then on an economic basis, the Dominican economy was in a similar state to the Haitian economy, and Santana believed that they needed a foreign power to modernize it. With all this in mind, Santana looked to Spain as a power that could annex the DR. Dominicans were, after all, mostly ethnically Spanish. After much negotiation, Spain agreed. So in March 1861, Santana declared the Dominican Republic to be Spanish once again. But the attitude of Santana was not that of many of the common Dominicans. While many were enthusiastic, at least initially, many others were not so. Many Dominicans were proud of their independence and therefore hated the new annexation by a country they saw as an alien foreign power. Many others were simply partisans of Baez and resented Santana. Within 6 weeks of the annexation, a revolt began in the northeast, but it was quickly crushed. Giffard, the president of Haiti, had an outright hostile reaction to the annexation. Soon after the annexation, Giffard published an inflammatory act declaring that Haiti did not recognize and would resist the annexation. Then he began aiding different groups of Dominican rebels in a small guerrilla war near the Haitian border, as well as allowing Dominican exiles to come to Haiti. This could have been a turning point in Haitian-Dominican relations. Since the bloody invasion of the DR by Jean-Jacques Dessalines, there had been a lot of racial hatred between the Haitians and Dominicans. Here was an opportunity for them to unite against a common enemy. But it was not to be the case. The actions of Haiti infuriated the Spanish government. So in response to this, they sent warships to Port-au-Prince to intimidate Haiti into backing down. This Spanish fleet arrived in Port-au-Prince in June of 1861, and there threatened to bombard the city. They demanded a payment and a naval salute from the Haitian government. Giffard conceded, paying the Spanish a sum which, to his credit, he had significantly negotiated down. Giffard backing down in the face of Spanish aggression was extremely unpopular among Haitians. Over the course of the Spanish occupation of the Dominican Republic, Spain became more and more hated. Like they had in colonial times, Spain imported Spanish, Cuban, and Puerto Rican administrators and soldiers into the colony, who replaced many locals in their positions of power. Spain went so far as to replace many local priests with foreign Spanish priests. A particular note is the military, who over the 5-year occupation brought in upwards of 21,000 soldiers into the DR, a huge number of people, especially when you consider that the inhabitants of the DR numbered no more than 120,000. Then there was economics, proving Santana wrong in his belief that Spanish occupation would help the Dominican economy. Spain reinstituted a system of trade which benefited Spain at the expense of the Dominicans. This poor economic situation was worsened by a lack of a strong currency. When Spain annexed the DR, they had promised to make the paper money in the DR redeemable for silver or gold, but this promise was never fulfilled, disappointing the Dominican people. Compounding all of this were the high taxes imposed by the Spanish government, who wanted the Dominicans to pay for the occupation. Soon, it seemed like all the money in the DR was going towards paying corrupt Spaniards. The final cause of resentment was when, in 1862, the relatively popular Santana resigned after being slighted by the Spanish government, and he was replaced with an extremely unpopular new governor. This new governor began limiting civil liberties of the Dominicans, banning things like gambling, as well as just generally doing things to piss off the Dominicans. For all of these reasons, Dominicans began to slowly become more and more angry with their Spanish occupiers. Several insignificant revolts broke out against the Spanish, but the really big revolt came in August 1863. This coincided with a huge epidemic of yellow fever among the Spanish soldiers. Of the previously mentioned 21,000, a full 9,000 were killed by yellow fever. The revolt quickly made progress, capturing much of the northeast and spreading into both cities and the countryside. Independent revolts in places across the country broke out. Spain attempted an early campaign against the insurgents, but the small army they sent was defeated. Santana rejoined the Spanish force as a general, but he soon died of unrelated causes. Soon, the revolting Dominicans established a provisional government in the city of Santiago. But from there, the revolt stalled, as the incoherent rebels did not march further. A guerrilla war by independent groups was fought across the island, but there wasn't much of a unified effort to take the capital by the Dominicans. These guerrillas particularly targeted any group of Spaniards making an offensive operation. The war stalled. In May of 1864, 6,000 Spanish soldiers went on a campaign that made some progress, recapturing territory that had been lost, but guerrilla warfare forced them back. Over that year, the Dominicans made even more progress. Soon, President Giffard of Haiti was looking to mediate a truce, but no truce was agreed on. And then, the government back in Spain decided that the war was getting far too expensive, so they annulled the annexation and pulled all their soldiers out. As this was going on the western side of the island, Haiti was actually experiencing quite a lot of stability. The waning of Giffard's popularity had not yet caused any major revolts. Giffard was still trying to push through his projects and reforms that I talked about last episode, although much of his reforms did not pan out. The economy was still improving, but it wasn't great. The beginning of the 1860s would be very quiet years in Haiti, with really not much happening. But of course, stability would not last. In stark contrast to the stability enjoyed by Haiti around this time was the United States. Note that that will never again be the case. As I talked about last episode, the United States was in the middle of the Civil War. So far, United States foreign policy had been defined by the Monroe Doctrine, a policy stating that the United States would resist European intervention into the Americas. As we will see in future episodes, this policy would soon change to America actively expanding its sphere of influence into countries like Haiti or the Dominican Republic, but that would wait until the end of the Civil War. For Haiti specifically, up until this point, the United States had chosen not to recognize Haitian independence due to itself still maintaining slavery. But when the South seceded, the United States no longer had slave owners to prevent the recognition of Haiti. So, in 1861, President Lincoln recognized Haiti as an independent country and sent a diplomat to Haiti. Then, in 1863, a financial treaty and an extradition treaty was signed between the two countries. Speaking of recognition, it has been a while since I talked about the French indemnity, but throughout Seleuc and Giffard's reign, they were both still paying it. And for a while, Haitian leaders would continue to pay both it and the loans they took out to pay for it. As I mentioned when I talked about him backing down to Spain, as time wore on, Giffard's popularity began to waver. Like the Santana Bay's divide in the DR, there were many old partisans of Seleuc who would never be able to reconcile themselves with Giffard. Many more of the plots, like the one that had killed his daughter, were discovered and crushed. In Lacay, a group of Piquets revolted, but their revolt was put down. Then, Giffard's reputation was tarnished in Haiti by rumors of corruption. These rumors spread to the national legislature, where he had been previously working in tandem with both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Soon, Giffard resorted to doing things through executive decree, angering, in particular, the House of Representatives. In summer of 1863, a very aggressive House of Representatives responded to allegations of Giffard's corruption by demanding an itemized budget from him. In response, Giffard dissolved the chamber and called for new elections. This was a huge turning point in his popularity. It had been wavering, but now he was viewed as a tyrant. When the new elections happened, the vast majority of constituents refused to vote. From here on out, as I will talk about next episode, Giffard's rule would be plagued by revolts. As next episode will be almost solely focused on the war between Giffard and the guy who would overthrow him, I want to end this episode by talking about a final important part of Giffard's policy, religion. In stark contrast to Seleuc, who had used voodoo as a means to gain legitimacy, Giffard was a staunch Catholic. In 1860, he concluded a concordat with the Pope, formally re-establishing relationships with the papacy. This led to new foreign priests coming to Haiti. In 1860, there were only about 30 priests in Haiti, but soon that number was up to 70. These priests were Frenchmen who saw themselves as missionaries to bring Catholicism to Haiti. They spread out into the countryside. These priests, like Giffard, often viewed aspects of voodooism as abominations. And in fairness, certain voodoo rituals, like the one I am about to get to, are very frowned upon, both then and now. Among certain extremist voodoo groups, they had almost totally abandoned Catholicism in favor of basically paganism. A part of this, although this was probably very, very rare, were living sacrifices. These sacrifices included both animal and human sacrifices. In February of 1864, in the village of Bizanton, 8 people were arrested and charged with the crime of kidnapping, killing, and then cannibalizing a young girl. The story goes that a voodoo practitioner had sacrificed this kidnapped girl to the gods with the help of 7 of his friends, and then they ate the body of the girl. This story is probably true, although the details are a little unclear. So Giffard had these guys all put on trial. In a rather stupid move, Giffard decided to prevent rumors in foreign countries of Haitian voodoo cannibalism by heavily publicizing this trial. His logic was that if foreigners saw how seriously the Haitian government tried to prevent voodoo, they would believe that there must not be any voodoo in Haiti. To this end, Giffard went so far as to invite foreign diplomats to watch the trial. Confessions were forced out of the murderers by having them beaten, and all 8 people were sentenced to be executed. He then made their execution into a huge public spectacle, having it take place on a market day in Port-au-Prince so that everyone could observe how Haiti was voodoo-free. Predictably enough, this totally backfired. The trial became an international sensation, with newspapers in the United States and Europe reporting on how Haitian voodoo cannibals had just cannibalized a young girl. Rather than explaining this as a very rare incident, many foreigners believed and reported that human sacrifices were a common part of voodooism. This trial shaped the image of Haitian voodoo in the minds of foreigners for decades to come. While many coups had been pretty bloodless so far, the revolt that overthrew Giffard was not to be. Instead, it would become a long and drawn-out conflict that I will go into next time. In fact, even the Dominican Republic would become involved. So next episode, we will watch as Giffard follows the fate of his predecessor, overthrown and sent into exile.